Hello and welcome to a podcast of impossible things. This week, our regular contributors, Swithin and James, have been temporarily deleted from the time stream and have instead been replaced by female parallel doubles. Vis-a-vis Caleb's girlfriend Bev and my wife Anna. I'm Peter Bell.
I'm Caleb Whitbridge.
Ladies, why don't you introduce yourselves briefly?
I'm Beverly, and I'm Caleb's girlfriend.
And I'm Annabelle, Peter's wife.
Okay, and starting with Bev, what is your impression of Doctor Who in general?
I'm very fond of Doctor Who. It's a great, great show, although I don't quite reach the geek status that Caleb does.
She puts up with me very well.
And what did you think of this week's episode, Turn Left, in particular?
I liked it a lot.
Any sort of particular highlights?
I like the way it gave a good overview of what's happened, mm-hmm. in order to remind us all, and also what things would be like without the Doctor, just how important he is.
Okay. Anna, I know you fairly well, but do tell the good people out there what your general consensus of Doctor Who is.
Unlike Bev, I'm quite the geek, really, secretly, but I have to say I'm fairly indifferent to Doctor Who. I don't have that link to it from childhood, so I don't really follow it all that keenly. Mm-hmm. Or I do follow it fairly keenly, but only because I'm sat next to you while you're watching it.
Fair enough. For me, it's one of the highlights of our marriage. This week's episode, Turn Left, in particular, because I know that you really did like the previous week's episode, Midnight.
I did. I was impressed. I'm not the biggest fan of Russell T. Davis. Although saying that, it has been pointed out to me that he was very good at bringing back Doctor Who, and I'm not sure very many people could have done it at all. And if I had to choose between him and Stephen Moffat, who first starting and bringing out a show, I would have to say that Russell T. Davis, I think, would have done a better job than Stephen Moffat. But saying that, I've not been impressed with the things that he's penned so far, and so I was really impressed with last week's episode. Mm-hmm. And then this week's episode, by comparison, I found a bit disappointing, because there was such a good trailer for it, and I just don't think it lived up to the bar that he set himself and the promise that he gave in being so good last week.
Caleb, what about your thoughts?
I really enjoyed the episode. I thought it was an interesting one. I did think it had its weaknesses. Rose seemed to be a doctor substitute with very little connection to her character of old, and structurally it just seemed to meander from one continuity back reference to another. But I did think that its portrayal of a world without a doctor was very interesting. It didn't add anything new to the old sci-fi staple of a parallel universe where everything's gone wrong, but it did do that idea well, I thought.
I must admit, I'm siding with Anna here, and not just because I have to live with her. I've always quite enjoyed the Doctor Light episodes in the past. I know they've created quite an amount of controversy amongst Doctor Who fandom.
Well, Love and Monsters did.
Well, Blink. Love and Monsters in particular.
Blink.
But you do still get the occasional moan that, you know, there shouldn't really be Doctor Light episodes. Whereas I think the series suffers from the opposite problem in that it's got a little bit too much Doctor. This week's episode, though, it was always on the verge of doing something great, but never quite seemed to take off. I agree with you that it did seem to be ticking the boxes in terms of referencing past episodes, namely the large alien invasions, of which it has a profusion, it has to be said. Billy Piper flashing in and out, as you said, didn't seem to be the Rose of old. Now, admittedly, she's been away for an indeterminate amount of time in her own time stream.
And she's got her own alien busting team, though.
She has her own alien busting team. She's head of Torchwood in the parallel universe. And in a parallel universe, the Torchwood spin-off series could be really good. We never know.
The mind boggles.
Yeah, doesn't it just? But she seemed to be there more so that the production team could point at her and say, "Look, we got Billy Piper back."
She doesn't seem herself. I have to say, and I'm probably going to bring you your first angry fan mail by saying this, I actually thought Catherine Tate in this episode was a better actor than Billy Piper. She had much more character, she had much more oomph behind her, and she, apart from when she started shouting,
Which was rather a lot of the time of this episode, let's be honest.
No, just near the end when you, we'll get into that later. But I think she had a lot more of my sympathy behind her than Billy Piper, who just seemed to kind of fade in and fade out and
literally
a bit pale. Yes.
She does look a little bit sickly, doesn't she? There is no escaping the fact that she does not look as healthy as she did throughout the first two series. I'm not sure whether she's gone back to the tissue paper diet or if she's been ill or if it was bad makeup, bad lighting, but she did not look herself.
I think she looked stressed, perhaps deliberately.
Mm.
In Doctor Who Confidential, you saw Billy Piper looking very normal and very nice. But then as Rose in the episode, her eyes, her lips were so big, her hair was so perfect, she did look quite scary.
I think James would probably disagree with you on every point, especially when she's wielding her big gun. But
that's to come next
week.
Ooh, and does it look next
if
week?
If any of the rest of you have a big gun fetish, then do write in and tell us. Which leads us neatly on, by the way, to our next section. We have been having some correspondence from those of you out there listening, and we always appreciate it. So thank you very much for taking the time to write to us and let us know that you're enjoying it. And if you're not enjoying it, then write to us and tell us as well. We just won't read it out. Thanks in particular to Clancy from the States, who says, "Much love and wibbly wobbly stuff. Have recently started listening to your podcast and am eagerly awaiting the latest. Just one suggestion. I recently downloaded a few old casts and was wondering if you guys start giving these tracks names that would make them easier to find on an iPod. It's a minor gripe, otherwise quite enjoyable. Keep up the good work."
We don't have iPods.
No, unfortunately, we are not in the trendy iPod crowd.
It looks fine on my MP3 player, but I'll try and check that it's works on other things. I'll look into that.
Especially now we're listening on iTunes, it is a
because
a
then
point.
Put you on a tape with auto reverse.
It is a point worth making, though, Clancy. So thank you for that. We will look into it indeed. Mention must also go to Aled Morgan, who announces himself as a big fan.
That's a big email.
It is a big email, and a bit too big to read out here, but he raises a couple of continuity points that were thrown up by the episode, which we will go into as we get into it. We should just, in the interest of even-handedness, mention Aled's blog, which is bloggerthehut, bloggerthehut.blogspot.com. We'll see if we can include a link from our blog as well. Well worth a look.
Which so, I also write for occasionally.
Yes, yes. Laura and Caleb Woodbridge is a contributor. Do you know how to spell nepotism?
That is the only email this week that comes from someone we know. The other couple are from genuine listeners, if I can put it that way.
Yes.
Not that I'm implying that Aled isn't a genuine listener, but
he's not a real person at all.
We've made them all up.
Caleb's invented him. There we go, though. But no, seriously, thank you very much indeed. If you are enjoying the podcast, if you have any thoughts, any disagreements, any points that you think we haven't really explored properly, then do get in touch with us. Our address is impossiblepodcast@gmail.com. And you can also get in touch with us via our Facebook group as well. Just put in a search for Podcast of Impossible Things. Right, if you're listening along at home, we are going to start now, as soon as we can get On Demand to work properly. If you're listening at home, press play now. And this is what appears to be the standard lead-in now for the BBC iPlayer, is the motorbike Wall of Death, which is slightly better.
Ring of Death.
Or Ring of Death, yes. But better than the Neon Woman flashing her legs, which is what normal BBC One viewers get.
And here we have Shan Shen, a Chinese-looking planet, which is very Firefly-esque.
It's very Firefly-Serenity-esque. It looks almost exactly like Persephone, which I was seen a couple of times in the series and gets name-checked in the movie. The mix of old red brick buildings and pagodas and oriental trappings are rather nice.
Yeah, it's a nice scenes on the alien planet. We've had plenty this
is our third alien planet in succession now, isn't it?
It's lovely to see the Doctor and Donna just enjoying themselves, just travelling.
They obviously have Starbucks in Shang Shen as well.
Yeah. And
it could be something considered something of a fantasy and sci-fi staple, though, that when you go to any planet or land that's based on ancient or to our minds at least exotic cultures, it's automatically a lively market scene. But that's really, really nitpicking. This lady.
Yeah, sucker in with the three moodings.
Yes. This lady played the blue beetle lady in Utopia at the end of last season.
Chantal.
Yes.
She was rather associated with beetles.
She is.
Yes.
And some criticism was levelled against her dodgy crash helmet with antenna prosthetics last series, but I think even that beats the stag beetle that we get this week.
I quite liked that. It was a nice old school alien prosthetic.
Oh, it was.
But it wasn't even attached to her. You felt like if she just shrugged her jacket off, she could get rid of it. It's like you'd have thought. Well, I thought she could at least have any kind of what they call it, the mandibles kind of attached into the back of her neck or something, or some kind of indication that it was actually, you know, a part of her. Whereas it just seemed kind of like it was hinting a lift.
It had to be invisible. Though.
I think it's all a ploy by the BBC's marketing department to get stag beetle rucksacks into the shops by Christmas.
Along with adipose ones.
Along with adipose and radio control red Daleks and Davros and whatever else.
I thought the setup for the parallel timeline, this alien fortune teller, I wasn't too taken with it. It seemed a bit.
It feels a bit forced. Yeah, really, doesn't it? Especially everything coming down to a turn left, turn right decision.
Is that a political statement? Turn to the right, and you get mass unemployment, concentration camps, and so on. So, yes. Don't you dare vote Tory.
Turn left, you get that nice David Tennant with big hair.
I do think she went very quickly from being adamant that she wasn't going to turn to going, oh, okay, you're probably right.
Yes, she does cave in within the space of about 2 seconds.
It's the incense.
Yeah.
She explains.
Because she gets so angry here and really argumentative, and you can imagine them both being strong characters, that would really kind of create a butt-heads moment. So for her to kind of capitulate like that is a bit...
Shoutiness is pre-Dr. Donna's default state, I think.
Yes.
And you do see a return to something of the shoutiness of the runaway bride.
She gets it from her mother. And at this point, I have to say that the more we see of Donna's mother, the more superfluous I think she is to the series as a whole. Donna is old enough and strong enough and secure enough in herself not to need this woman who really has no redeeming qualities, as you can see. She's just a horrible woman. She's a bully.
I think perhaps that's the point. She's supposed to be a bully that's undermining Donna's confidence, but Donna seems too confident to kind of react to that. She doesn't seem to be as much of an influence as I think the writers were wanting her to be.
Mm. Possible. It's been said that Russell T. Davis, I mean, we've said it in the past on this very podcast, that Russell T. Davis only writes one type of mother, and that's the bolshy, argumentative, rather domineering type. And in almost every case, a single mother as well. If you look at Jackie Tyler, if you look at Martha's mother, even though she's still technically married, they're estranged. And now Donna's mother as well. But Jackie has a charm and a warm-heartedness that wins you over. Mm. Martha's mother has, again, this sort of style and an elegance and a self-assuredness, which is quite compelling, even though we see very little of her. And really, Donna's mum is horrible, and she's superfluous.
And Billy Piper.
She gets the and of death. I'm surprised that didn't prompt more debate on the internet forums.
It did. Yes. Perhaps she'll get to redeem herself in the series.
I hope so. I hope so. It will all pay off if she gets to do something truly noble and heroic at the end. Because here all she does is...
Noble would be appropriate.
Yeah, noble would be appropriate. Here all she does is nag and moan and then sort of generally regress into herself and become depressed.
I think what they were trying to do was that she would be seen as a very negative influence on Donna's life. And Donna's supposed to be this person with very low self-esteem, who's willing to, you know, marry a guy who's trying to kill her. And just very thinks low of herself, and then the doctor comes along and says she's brilliant and she kind of gets a boost from her. But I think the way Catherine Tate plays it is she's actually too strong to have that influence kind of come across.
You could be right. That's a very good point.
But I think that's what they're aiming for.
I liked this scene. They have... this is a point that Caleb has made quite often in the past. Rusty Davis excels at drawing people in very short, sharp brushstrokes, doesn't it? And you've got a very good sense of the relationship between this group of friends as a whole, but these two people in particular, within the space of a minute, really.
And the return five past for the web star.
Yes.
How does Donna know it's a web?
She can see.
There's no residual effects from the parallel time stream that
the
Doctor
has. Yes, it
must be. I was a little disappointed. Don't dwell on it. I was a little disappointed that they didn't show the really, really badly drawn, slow-moving lightning bolts that moves towards that little black girl from the Christmas special. It actually makes it look like quite a powerful attack, whereas originally it looked rubbish.
Yeah, this is a recurring thing throughout the programme. You get all these very dramatic events and they don't seem to hit home. I get the impression... I feel like Russell T. Davis, he has a tendency to get very impatient when it comes to climactic events and season finales, where he kind of rushes through them. He doesn't really give them a chance to sink in. He doesn't seem to have enough patience to kind of really develop it. And this should be a very kind of dramatic moment. It just comes across as...
I thought the death of the Doctor, they could have made a lot more of that.
Yes. It might even have been better had they... focus the episode around a particular invasion, like the Rachnos attack, and then alluded to what would go on to happen later. Whereas they, as Anna said, they do seem to be skipping from one invasion to the next, maybe ticking the boxes a little.
It's a lot like when Donna was stuck in the library, and her life there just skipped from one important event to another.
Yeah,
very little in between.
But without the sci-fi rationale.
Yes, well, that's a very good point.
There's no real sense of time passing, is there? And it doesn't feel real. I think that's the point. It feels like the scene in the library where it's not supposed to be real, but this is actually supposed to be real, and it doesn't have that.
Yeah. And here we have Billy.
It just struck me, rewatching this, that the Doctor drops the sonic screwdriver as they're loading his body into the ambulance, and it's left lying on the tarmac. Now, and we even get a little close-up and some music to accompany that, which is a clear signpost that this should be turning up at some point later on and it should have some significance. But has none whatsoever. And I've just remembered that the first time I watched this, I was waiting for the sonic screwdriver to make a reappearance all the way through, and it never did.
Some people have been waiting for the sonic screwdriver that... what's her name in the first episode?
Yes, Super Nanny Lady.
I think it was just a more dramatic way of showing, oh, he's dead.
Yeah. I'd have picked it up, though.
I expected her to pick it up. Oh, and she's vanished.
We have just talked all over Billy Piper's first proper read.
It was that dramatic. It wasn't that, actually. As a reappearance goes.
But wasn't half as dramatic as that surprise appearance in the first episode where she turns around and we're not expecting to see her and then she just fades away.
Sorry, go ahead.
Have they perhaps been touting Billy Piper's return to the series a little too much, so that there's nothing much they can do to surprise us with.
Yeah, I think perhaps having signposted it so much, it does perhaps remove some of the impact now that she makes her appearance proper.
I think the most dramatic one they did actually was in the last episode where she appears on the TV screen. I thought it was nicely done.
We only see this bit from Donna's perspective. We don't know how long it is between each time she appears, each time Rose appears to Donna, how much time has passed for Rose.
Yeah.
As Donna points out, she's always wearing the same clothes. It would be interesting to see it from Rose's perspective.
It struck me that I got the impression that she was time travelling. I'd be interested to see, hopefully we'll get an explanation of it from Rose's point of view.
Sorry, Anna's pointing at something on the screen here. Adrian Brody?
You know the guy who's in Hollywoodland, piano. Oh no,
he's not
like him there. Never mind, carry on.
Okay.
He just looked a bit like him.
But some people are talking, is this flashing and appearing her arriving from a parallel universe, or is it her just jumping back and forward in time using the
unit's sort of time machine?
Yes.
I think it could just be the unit time machine, although at first I thought she was moving between universes each time, which would be more exciting, I think.
And it's a return for Oliver Morgenstern from Smith and Jones.
See, I can see why he did this bit, but it's not fair and realistic going. My colleague, Martha Jones. That's Martha Jones.
Yes.
She gave me the last of her oxygen. And they do it again with Sarah Jane as well. It's clunky.
Yeah, I was very surprised to hear this little throwaway reference to the child actors from the Sarah Jane Adventures also being found dead in the hospital. Which is quite grim, really.
Being a fan of the Sarah Jane Adventures, that series, I was quite upset to hear that they probably died.
Yes.
That worked. I thought, oh no. Well.
Especially as the Sarah Jane Adventures have turned out some stories that have beaten some of the stuff that Doctor Who has produced. Yes.
And it's been a far better spin-off than Torchwood.
Yes. Oh, by head and shoulders above Torchwood. And, of course, this episode does have a direct link to the Sarah Jane Adventures with the Tricksters Brigade.
Yeah, see, I hadn't watched that episode. I didn't get that.
Now, the idea of what if the Doctor died or what if the Doctor never existed, that's quite an obvious one, and I planned out an idea for a story based around that concept some time ago. Took it in a slightly different direction to this, but I was surprised that I thought that kind of idea could make a series finale in itself.
If you get to the very end of a series and then have an episode in which all of the good work of the Doctor and the Companions has been completely undone, and you see that it's almost been in vain,
It not to be reset at the end of the story, or not completely, and that to lead into the finale with Davros and the Daleks. They now still exist and are at large because the Doctor has been removed from the timeline.
Yes.
And it would have perhaps been more interesting if, rather than restoring the timeline, Donna had only managed to bring the Doctor and his friends from the other timeline into this one. And they hadn't yet managed to put things back.
I was a bit disappointed they went for the obvious storylines as well. I would have liked to have seen, you know, more subtle things like, I don't know, the Stone Angels or something like that kind of make its way through. And things that you thought were very little things that he did kind of turn into big things rather than the Titanic crashing into the Earth. Which wouldn't affect anyone anyway, because as Peter said earlier, they'd all evacuated London anyway.
Yes, according to the Christmas special, as Bernard Cribbins said, London was evacuated except for Bernard Cribbins and the Queen. So the death toll would have been... Well, we have to assume there were more people around, but the city was generally deserted.
Well, it also wiped out the... presumably they hadn't gone far enough, or not enough of them had gone far enough to escape the... the nuclear blast and fallout from this.
Well, no, perhaps not. But
it's the Lake District.
Yeah, that's it. It's one.
Why did Donna didn't go that far? Did she? She went to Kent or something.
Well, they're close enough to see the mushroom cloud.
Yeah, I feel that was a bit. Yeah. Nice little scene with the two axes. It's quite fun seeing the two of them together.
This might have worked better had it been almost a buddy story with Rose and Donna. And Rose being the mysterious one that Donna doesn't really trust.
Mm.
And Rose being a more constant presence, as opposed to just flitting in and out at convenient plot points.
See, I assumed it was going to be like that. They don't actually have much to say to each other, do they?
They don't make the most of Billy Piper, that's the surprising thing. Mm. This being her big comeback and all.
And then probably the next episode is going to be so busy with all these other people that are going to fit in. That,
yes.
She's not going to get a break.
Yeah, I felt this... This felt like an extended trailer for the real return of Billy Piper. It didn't feel like you got her back, really.
I can't believe they made Bernard Cribbins sleep on the sofa.
But I think Bernard Cribbins deserves a spin-off series by all of his own. Really.
Yes.
One Man and His Telescope.
Yeah, One Man. Yeah,
I
that's
watched
it.
That.
Adventures in Astronomy with Bernard Cribbins. When Sir Patrick Moore dies, I think they should give the Sky at Night job to Bernard. Really,
that'd be good.
I was convinced this was your sister when she first walked in. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, you'll know that my sister-in-law, Anna's sister,
she's got her own Facebook group.
Yes, a regular extra on Doctor Who, has been killed off by every major monster.
Many deaths of Natasha Moti. She's been killed by Cybermen and by Daleks and by falling beams in Titanic.
Yes, she died on the Titanic. She's been hypnotised by the Sycorax. She's in this series finale, but she refuses to tell us what she's been doing, which is hugely annoying. I have been plying her with questions and she's staying tight-lipped.
Confidentiality agreements. Bah!
Although she has let slip that she's been in... Well, no. No, I won't say that.
He doesn't seem too surprised.
That's it. Yeah. That satellite
must be...
That's
the best satellite.
Lying right next to the Titanic.
Like they just stole that from Independence Day.
Yeah. That bit was rubbish in the Christmas special. It wasn't an awful lot better here.
See, London's just exploded, and I've just been in cold.
This is...
That's the point, though. That's Donna's reaction, too, isn't it? She just...
Is that
what? Yeah.
See, Wilf is one step ahead of everyone all the way.
Yeah.
Stick Wilf in the TARDIS.
Yes.
He did it in the movies. Well, the second movie.
It does seem a bit... Are they supposed to be seeing the mushroom cloud from the Lake District? Looks a bit close.
She probably said where it was, actually, when we talked over it.
And... Now, cue the funniest moment in Doctor Who history. The pointy Spanish maze.
She expected to do an invasion of body snatchers and open her mouth and scream.
That was dreadful. It really was.
Lawrence Miles raised an interesting point in his review stroke rant about contemporary culture in saying that Doctor Who has shied away from portraying the near future since it's come back. But this, if global warming and all these disasters and stuff kick in, this is perhaps actually the closest we get to a portrayal of what could happen in the near future, which was an interesting
point. Surely Daleks should have invaded Manhattan by now.
Yes, they should have done. But then again,
and the Carrionites.
The Carrionites should have taken over at the Globe Theatre as well. The Pyroviles should have spread out in their fiery empire from Mount Vesuvius. None of this should actually be here at all.
But then, with all those aliens competing all over Earth, then
it would be like Alien versus Predator.
Yes, it'd be this big monster bitch fight.
Well, that was part of the idea for my version, which I came up with before the new series started.
Caricature Italian.
Which would have had the Luigi from Ashes to Ashes, by the way.
Isn't he? That's where I recognise him.
Which would have had...
Ashes to Ashes, he owns the Italian restaurant.
He's everyone's caricature Italian.
But he plays a much better Italian in Ashes to Ashes than he does here, I think. Here he just seems to be a character from a lower low.
So these immigrants have large families.
Yeah.
Yes, and are terribly jovial and salt of the earth, really.
And my Zero Doctors story involved Earth being under the control of the Master on the behalf of the Time Lords as they tried to keep the timeline protected as a massive... war raged, probably with the Daleks. Time war with the Daleks. And so you had all the different monsters from classic Doctor Who all trying to invade and at the same time, basically.
Stephen Moffat will listen to this podcast and steal all those ideas. Claim they're all his.
My story had Bernard Cribbin. Running Torchwood.
Yes!
See if that makes it interesting.
Oh, I really hope he turns up and sees it. Captain Jarrick, we decided that you're rubbish and your team put the Earth in more danger than it was in the first place. So we found this newspaper salesman with some previous TARDIS experience in a parallel time stream. He's not canon, but he'll do.
Oh, this is the funniest line. The fat is flying.
there is a very wartime feel to this, invoking the ghost of World War II and the Blitz and stuff.
Mm. Yes, and this scene here with Donna and her mum trying to get some sleep on the kitchen floor, and they're talking about being refugees. There are people, so many people, actually in that situation right now. And that really struck me.
It's a shame, really, that they don't develop this idea more of these people being homeless and not having a vote.
It reminds me of the one where the Master came back, the other season finale.
Yes.
Where there's all this other stuff happening, and it's really quite interesting, and Russell T Davies just skips over it because he wants the big climax, he wants to get to the end of it. Because you had the whole thing with Martha traveling the world, which could have been a series by itself.
Yeah.
And you've got the bit where they
there's a spin-off novel covering that.
When the Doctor turns into John Sims and then disappears, and you have Martha and John Barrowman as the Doctor... travelling from time to time, just randomly trying to get back. That could have been an episode or a series in itself, and you had all these good ideas within it, and he just kind of skips through them because
he wants the big moment,
with the glittery lights and the Doctor ascending to heaven.
Yeah.
I got the impression, and this is a certain amount of my own interpretation, a huge amount of my own interpretation, that... we've had talk of an emergency government. We've got talk of them not having a vote because they have refugee status. The implication is that this is obviously a right-wing government that has now taken power, but we don't really hear any more about it.
I like this scene. The party singing scene. The second
Bohemian Rhapsody reference that Rusty Davis has made since Doctor Who came back. He's obviously a Queen fan.
I think this is... actually... It is quite bleak, but it is quite effective. And I think, in some ways, it's done with a bit more subtlety for focusing on the characters rather than, oh no, neo-Nazis have taken over Britain, which could easily be very overblown and cheesy.
Yes,
Nazis who think that shooting at an exhaust pipe is going to stop it.
An awful lot of ridicule was aimed at a soldier in the Sontaran episode earlier in the series who was shooting at the exhaust pipe to try and stop the engine of a car. And people were just pointing out that he just looked really, really thin. Because he was standing by himself doing something of a warehouse. And this chap...
That's so good, they put it in again.
This chap doesn't look any smarter, to be perfectly honest.
I like the spooky music as Donna walks around the corner knowing full well Rose will be there.
It's Rose's theme, in fact. Mm-hmm. It's the bad wolf.
Well, the bad wolf, yes.
Which has more or less become Rose's theme.
It was originally written to be associated with the Doctor's dark and mysterious past, became associated with Bad Wolf. Also say the sleeve notes to the Doctor Who soundtrack CD.
Okay.
Which other show would people actually
pick up on that? There must be some out there.
Well, some of the movies, like The Lord of the Rings...
Star Wars in particular, which has very character themes.
A very clear.
I would have been very slow to pick that music.
That was a torture. Oh, by the way.
A touch of the torture theme music there.
Have you seen the pictures of the Crucible, which was shown on Blue Peter earlier today?
No, I haven't.
I think we'll need to do the Imperial March whenever it comes on screen, because it's that much of a rip-off of the Death Star. Dun, dun, dun.
Dear, no. Maybe they're Imperial Daleks.
Perhaps they are.
That's the Crucibles as opposed to the Cruciform.
Should we pay attention to a Rose scene for once?
Okay, let's do that.
Talking about the Doctor.
Really? Great hair?
Big hair, certainly.
A lot of hair. Quick.
Enormous hair. CGI enhanced hair, I suspect. I never met him, and he's dead to die. Here's another idea for a Doctor Who spin-off. David Tennant's quiff gets his own series.
Like that episode in The Simpsons where Homer gets a hair transplant from a hardened criminal and he kills people.
Right. Haven't seen
David
that.
David Tennant's hair saves the world. It's not a tree.
This is quite a nice idea that without Donna there to stop him, he'd have stayed too long and died, needing the companion to rein him in.
Yeah.
In which case, he died of his own stupid fault. Because the only reason he was standing there at all was so he could gloat over the death of these alien spider baby penguins.
Is that why he has so many companions? Just come with me, or I will kill myself.
Come with me, or I'll spend so much time meeting out vengeance on my alien foes that I'll get myself blown up. What am I supposed to do? I'm
nothing special. Don is really losing it here. She's despairing. She is nothing special. She's so confused.
Catherine Tate is very good indeed.
Catherine Tate.
And she does actually have a nice hair.
She does.
Oh dear.
Now view Catherine Tate in a completely different light when she was first announced as the permanent companion. My face fell, but she's won me over completely. Mm.
Yeah, because I did think, oh really, when they announced it, but she has.
And I do think she's been better than Billy Piper in this episode.
Yes, she has been given more to do. To be fair.
Yeah, true.
I wonder how Rose knows all this stuff. It's not explained as yet.
No.
It looks as though she's been studying Donna for a long time.
I wonder whether this happened.
Stalking her.
Yeah. Perhaps she's already met the other version.
Maybe she's just jealous. The evil ex.
Could be.
I don't think so.
There was no need for Donna to throw herself in front of that lorry at all. I suspect the two words may have been, "He's mine."
It's yeah, so Lawrence Miles on his blog has got a picture of Donna lying on the floor with the caption, "Don't worry, Rose did this to her dad too. It means she likes you." Because it's a bit similar to Father's Day.
Oh, hugely similar.
So this is another really nice scene.
Yes, this is a very good scene, very affecting.
And then they go and
in it. And they go too far and they explain too much. They don't need the line about the labour camps. We kind of get it.
Yeah.
I felt that too. It was a bit too...
And it's just one of those kind of perfect moments, and then they kind of stick something.
They stick a nice big obvious label on it in case the 10-year-olds don't get it. Which,
and if you'd not had this shot of him crying.
Yeah. Another criticism that's been levelled by a lot of people against the series since it came back, particularly of late, is that it does seem to be underestimating the intelligence of the viewer and spelling things out in big obvious ways when it shouldn't really be doing that. And I think, admittedly, if you're having a family-friendly programme that admittedly has a child-friendly bias, then you do need a certain amount of exposition and explanation. But children are far smarter than we give them credit for, I think. And they don't need all of this.
This is quite a bleak little scene between Donna and her mum.
Her mum finally confirms just how much of a disappointment Donna is to her. Yeah, it's just heartbreaking.
This just made me dislike her mother that bit more.
It is
horribly self-centred.
But in this version of events, under such bleak circumstances,
yes,
I don't know. I think she's always that character. It just comes out more in a bleaker future. I think that was the whole point of Donna's mum, is that you've got Donna's mum, who's a negative influence, so she flocks to her grandfather, and then she goes to David Tennant, who kind of echoes her grandfather in a way. One's an echo of the other, but they're both kind of positive influences on her life. But I think Donna's mother's character is supposed to be like that.
I have a suspicion that Russell T. Davis doesn't necessarily see her like that. But I could be.
No, you're not. Yeah, that's really alignment.
But he has done characters like that before. If you look at things like Queer as Folk, he had a guy with a parent who disowned him. He does do characters with no obvious redeeming features, besides the fact of the negative influence they have in the protagonist.
This is an effective little scene, but again, one where they perhaps hammer home the point a little too.
They did it better in the trailer.
Yes.
Yeah, this should be an event moment, really, shouldn't it? This should be the fulcrum around which the action of the episode hinges, or at least Donna's character hinges, which it does to an extent, but it doesn't really... It's all over too quickly.
I think, again, too much talking as well.
Mm. It's nice to see UNIT back in force, though.
I wonder what they've done with the Doctor's body.
We're never told.
No.
He should be in a big glass tank in formaldehyde or something, like a Damien Hirst
installation. John Barrowman's got near him and chopped more bits off him.
I'm sure I suspect him. I don't know if Captain Jack draws the line at necrophilia or not.
Let's not go there. Talking like the Doctor, could disturb the causal nexus. I just feel that Rose's personality is too much subsumed under the role of surrogate Doctor. That's one of the things I feel doesn't quite work.
It's the fact that she knows everything that's going on, isn't it? In fact, we suspect she knows more than the Doctor.
I don't think they quite make enough of her missing the Doctor and needing him back, actually.
No, that's true. That's true.
To have travelled over all those universes and to see the Doctor die.
She seems to be doing this for fun, as opposed to...
It's interesting that Donna didn't get a bigger on the inside scene. She got a smaller on the outside, because she arrived first inside the TARDIS.
Yes, that's
true. And then went out.
Very good point.
So this is the first time she's...
It's good to see UNIT doing what Torchwood have singularly failed to do and actually adapting alien technology that they found as well.
Instead of using it
for sexual people. Yes, considering that it's Torchwood's sole remit, they don't actually appear to have done anything like that. What do you think? I'd also like to know why, since becoming a refugee, Donna has started dressing like one and just putting on layer after layer after layer and big ugly coats, whereas everyone else is still wandering around looking perfectly presentable.
Well, Billy Piper is, but
Billy Piper and the unit officers. And...
Well, the unit officers are wearing uniforms.
So. Well, this is true, yes. even the other refugees that got shipped off to the labour camps.
Yeah, it's like when you become a refugee, they burn all your bright clothes.
You're not allowed to dress in anything that you like.
Or smile.
I'm sure warm suits are clothes, they can come in red or purple.
Yes.
Nice non-answer to... that question of, were you and him?
Yeah.
The dead TARDIS is very creepy. I mean, we've seen it before, Rise of the Cybermen, for example. But
the circumstances are quite different, because we know the Doctor's not coming back in this case. That could be a very good idea for a Doctor Light episode of Haunted TARDIS. Now go on, Donna, open your eyes and look at it. It's actually quite funny. You'll wonder why you ever worried.
I mean... Bless.
It should have his things sunk into a neck and the legs kind of going through it.
Bless Graham Harper, he tries not to show all of it at once.
Yes. he does his best with everything.
Yeah,
he?
Keep it out of focus. But it does just look like a particularly plasticky backpack.
It's just one of the benefits of having directed Classic Who, I suspect, is you know that the monster's probably going to be rubbish.
So it's chewing on her hair.
it's almost quite affectionate, really.
I mean, the idea is quite creepy.
Bev was telling us something before we started recording, wasn't she? A line, something that was mentioned in Doctor Who Confidential about the choice of going with a beetle.
Yes, they said that they deliberately made it a very standard, easily recognisable beetle. They didn't want to make it look too alien. They wanted it to be very clear, this is a beetle.
Did they explain why?
I can't remember now.
Because that's what it looks like.
I do think something slightly more alien may have benefited, because then it doesn't matter if it looks fake and plasticky, because we know it's not real.
But its purpose is very clear. To be a creepy beetle.
It's interesting, this, about the readings and something special about Donna separately from the beetle.
Yeah.
What this will be, no doubt, will be revealed in the finale, but it's quite intriguing.
Creepy things need a lot more leg and a bit of slime, I think.
They need to have better movement.
Something a bit more organic looking, I think.
Yeah. So James Cameron, when he was directing Aliens, said you can have the best looking monster suit in the world, but as soon as it moves like a man, then you lose the effect. And he said he and Stan Winston spent several weeks just working out movement or ways of making the aliens move in a particularly alien fashion.
Mm. An alien is a good example, because it was supposed to be kind of a part machine, part organic looking thing, because it had that look of steel, but also creepy lifeless.
Yes.
Lifeless is a word. And that had slime.
It did.
Donna running around with this coat of the wires caused a lot of speculation, because she was spotted filming, so they were out and about. Nice line with the water.
Yes.
Does look a bit like she's going to blow herself up.
Don't go on the tube.
You've been
shot in the head before you could get past the ticket barrier.
In retrospect, it's amazing that she even got as far as, the street to throw herself in front of me.
Woman in a coat full of wires running across London.
I did like the score for this bit. Mm.
This is a very good scene.
And you do get you do get a sense of wonder that she's standing in the middle of a time machine, considering that this is a a series that features a time machine every single week, the idea of her standing in the middle of a concrete floor and travelling through time is actually quite exciting.
The Doctor would be proud, wouldn't he? Wonderful humans, done it again.
And her speech here is, her performance is really good. Just the turn from the optimism and hope and then the fear.
I'd like to see that. I think this episode missed Donna Noble having an argument with herself.
You've got a very death and resurrection theme here.
The fact that TARDIS is coming back to life in the background as well.
Oh yeah, I didn't notice that.
A better world takes its place. Russell T. Davies.
This is where they should have left it, and then she just gets zapped back in time with Rose's expression sort of lingering in her mind.
Yeah.
They go too far again, and we get this speech about, oh, I'm sorry. No. Sorry. Well, even that would have been fine.
So is Donna going to die even in the restored timeline?
Well, we know she's not in the specials next year.
Right, that stuttery guy that she was supposed to marry. That was quite sad.
That was very sad. I really do hope that there's some sort of reunion for the two.
Yeah. Oh, this bit where she suddenly realises she's got 4 minutes to run half a mile. The other week I had to run for a train, and I have never run so far or so fast in my life. It nearly killed me. It took me a full 20 minutes to recover, and I was quite glad we actually missed the train because it would have been worse on the train. But I thought, no, it just brought back how sick I felt.
You didn't throw yourself in front of it at the last minute to try and stop it.
No. But I can imagine that iron scenario. Oh.
Yeah, with the whole resurrection type thing, it's Russell T. Davies not being a very good atheist yet again. and picking up on these quite...
Or just an atheist of ridiculous contrasts and conflict.
He likes his...
He's been an atheist who wants to believe in some sort of god, doesn't he?
Well, he likes the stories, I think.
You get the impression that if Jesus had had special effects, he'd... Rusty Davis would sign up.
Do you think it's significant that her mother calls her lady there, and the fortune teller at the beginning calls her lady? Is that just...
Oh, I hadn't noticed that.
Things, or is that important?
That's a good point. It's hard to tell at this stage, really.
It could just be... Russell T. Davies turned a phrase,
He likes lady.
There is a theory that she is, in fact, a time lady.
Yeah.
Romana,
trying to bring
or
her
the Rani, or whoever.
Like the Satan of this. She's the Satan and the Doctor's the god.
Or Rose's, Rose's an angel.
And again, very like Fowler's then.
A little disappointed that we didn't get any sound of impact. Oh, that's cheesy as well. Slow push in on screaming woman.
I'd rather a scream than a thud.
If you're going to have a character throw themselves in front of a lorry in an act of noble sacrifice, you should at least get a little off-screen thud.
It's nice of Billy to look sad.
If Rose could travel back in time to this point, why didn't she stop Donna turning right?
Yes, and why did Donna think that this was the only chance she got? Why didn't she think, hang on, I'll just have to hang around until Rose turns up again, and then we can try again?
That would take an entire other episode.
I like this scene with everything going backwards and unhappening, and the terrified fortune teller.
Oh yeah, that's another. I think that's the second worst line. You were so strong. What are you?
Again, unsubtle for perhaps Donna looks into the heart of the TARDIS at the end of this series, or goes glowy, or whatever.
I think they're all going to go glowy.
One at a time, like that.
The only question really is, green or blue?
Or gold. I think it's probably going to be gold. I have a nasty suspicion that the Doctor's going to be incapacitated at the mercy of Davros and the Daleks, and all of the companions are going to join together and go all glowy and messianic, and they're all going to save him because he's wonderful and has great hair.
Well, that's a John Barrowman.
I'm willing to put money on that. I really am.
It's interesting. Parallel. Yeah, this is interesting. Again, there's something about Donna.
Yes.
Is it really necessary, though, to have her be extra special?
Yeah, I think it does undermine, perhaps, the idea that she is an ordinary person.
Yes, exactly.
Although, if you are going to reveal that your ordinary person actually has some extra special quality, then they've been handling it very well, because it has been very much in the background, and it's only now coming to the fore.
It's probably because it's only now been thought of.
It could be true.
Do you think Donna will now realise that woman was in fact the rose that she's heard about?
Well, presumably the Doctor will tell her before next week's
episode. I bet he won't. Well,
from the trailer, it looks like he probably will, because you've got them discussing the TARDIS Rose Return.
Get a brilliant David Tennant face here when he learns.
Doing his eye acting.
Yes. He's getting gradually more worried.
You got that music.
That was nice.
Yes, that was. Graham Harper knows his stuff.
Hey, I guessed that.
I did get a little thrill when she first said
yes. And this bit now.
This is everything from here on out is fantastic. It's pure fan baiting joy. Having Bad Wolf on the TARDIS was a lovely touch. Mm.
Yeah,
I don't know, I'm still disappointed from the last Bad Wolf reveal. I didn't think I was going to be another one of those.
The cloister bell! Oh!
And it's gone all Paradox machine-y.
Yes.
And, this next time trailer, I was like,
this is fantastic.
It's got the stars.
Could not be any better.
Torchwood. Oh, well, never mind. Sarah Jane! Harriet!
June! Red Daleks!
Unit!
Yes, new Dalek sources.
Is it obligatory that each series finale must have someone saying, we are at war at some point?
Apparently. Oh, the Torchwood team fighting Daleks with machine guns in the hub.
The Shadow Architect.
Oh, is that the Shadow Architect?
Oh, apparently
so. You know more about this than I do.
Ooh. How long is it until Saturday?
Too long.
Let's see the time. It's
we are looking forward to it.
25 to 10 on Tuesday evening.
Is it that late already?
It is indeed. Yes,
that is by far and away the best next time trailer they've given us so far. So there we go. That's episode 11 over and done with. 2 weeks left to go of this series. What did everyone think on rewatching that, Caleb?
Yeah, I did think it was quite interesting how bleak it was, and especially compared to the normally optimistic view of humanity that you get in Doctor Who, notably the previous series finale, where the whole conflict is basically over human nature, the Master's view that the human race, the greatest monsters of them all, and that they become the Toclafane, versus the Doctor who, through the power of humanity channeled through him, becomes this floaty god figure.
Yes.
And generally the series has had a very optimistic view. It does seem to have been modified, because the Christmas special killed people off left, right and centre. We made a deliberate point of being less upbeat, everyone lives, and more making a deliberate point of subverting the poetic justice of Doctor Who. Mm. And also with Flowers of the Wood, you had the humans as villains, and now you see, with the Doctor gone and faced with all these disasters, humanity, it becomes quite dark. You have them sending people off to camps, yes, and so on.
Of course, we had Midnight last week that showed some dark aspects of human characteristics.
And so I think that's interesting. I think it gives a more depth to the series to have both aspects of humanity, the potential for good but also the potential for evil. But I thought I would have liked it if the story had led into the finale a bit more, if it hadn't just hit the reset button quite so much. But I suppose that's inevitable, especially with a Russell T. Davies script.
Dev, what do you think?
I really enjoyed it. And yes, on a second watching, it did seem that the main point was to bring Rose back and bring the bad wolf theme back. But everything else that happened, as Caleb said, just had the reset button hit, and so it didn't seem as significant. I think the first time I saw it, it was more exciting perhaps because you didn't know where it was all going. But I really, really enjoyed it.
I think if Donna had remembered it, that would have made it matter more, in a sense.
Yeah.
You can forgive. I mean, obviously it's a what if type thing, but I think when you have a memory wipe for the character effectively as well, it removes any impact on her. So there's with Last of the Time Lords, you did have the reset button, but as far as Earth went, but the impact on all the main cast remained. They'd all been through the year that ever was, and so it wasn't. So it worked dramatically. It wasn't a reset button altogether.
What do you think?
Pretty much what I said before. I mean, I do think the trailer does look interesting, and I just hope that they follow through with what they're promising, because I didn't think that this episode did. Yeah, and I agree with Caleb and Bev that it did seem to be just kind of filler. And it's a shame because it had some wonderful concepts there and it just didn't kind of... It rushed through them in order to kind of use them to deliver Rose. And kind of set up things. I think that's the thing. It was a construct in order to set up a few plot lines for the next episode, and they didn't concentrate on the episode itself so much.
The tyranny of the story arc.
I'm rewatching it now. I do think I think Caleb's idea of having Donna be able to remember the Doctor and the life that she had would have made this an awful lot better, because it would have given it a greater sense of immediacy. As it stands, I think Donna spends too much time just reacting to things happening and not actually having any real power over the way the story goes. And likewise, I think they spend too long showing how bad things get without the Doctor. They're just going through and referencing old episodes. I think that could have been handled far more effectively in a shorter space of time, and then got into the time travel aspect and given Rose a greater role and shown them actually trying to actively change the way things are. But for all of that, it as always, has some really good moments. Some spots of brilliant acting.
Yeah.
That was somewhat lessened by the script going a little too far in explaining what was happening. But be that as it may, there were some cracking bits. And the ending was fantastic, if only from a purely self-indulgent fan point of view. But then as I'm a purely self-indulgent fan, I'm quite happy with that. So definitely looking forward to next week.
You and at least 7 million other people.
Me and whoever's listening to this, to be honest. Hello. I know you're out there.
But like Russell T. Davies said in Doctor Who magazine, by now, with all the repeats and DVD sales and everything, there are an awful lot of people who will have seen The Runaway Bride and will have seen...
You do have to reward people who have been following a series. Yeah. You can't expect everyone to be tuning in for the first time. At the end of the day, what is Russell T. Davies if not a self-indulgent fan? He's just a self-indulgent fan in charge. So, and I can't really begrudge him that. But there we go. We're at the end of another episode and another podcast. So thank you very much indeed for joining us. Hope you've enjoyed it. And do join us again next week for The Stolen Earth, episode 12 of series 4. And as we said earlier on, if you do want to get in touch with us and share your thoughts at any point, our email address is impossiblepodcast@gmail.com. Or sign up to our Facebook group and leave us a message on our wall. Thank you.